Welcome to Mazum Gumzo, African Scholarly Conversations, a podcast that highlights the perspectives of various stakeholders in academia and research fields across Africa through open dialogue on Mazum Gumzo on scholarly communication in Africa.
Welcome to Mazum Gumzo, African Scholarly Conversations, where we are joined by an expansive list of African policymakers, science communication and science communication and scholarly specialists, innovators, and tertiary institution leads who contribute to this realm of science and scholarly communication. I'm your host, Joy Owango, the Executive Director of Training Center in Communication, TCC Africa, a capacity building trust based at the University of Nairobi Chiromo campus in Nairobi, Kenya. This episode is particularly special as we are joined by two remarkable women who have been at the forefront of promoting open science and open access and shaping the scholarly communication ecosystem in South Africa for the last 7 to 8 years. First, we have Ms. Ina Smith, Program Manager at the Academy of Sciences of South Africa, ASAF, and the Director of Open Access Journals Ambassador for Southern Africa. Ina brings a wealth of experience and passion for fostering openness in scholarly communication, and her role as the DOAJ ambassador emphasizes her commitment to advancing open access practices in the region. Joining Ms. Ina is Ms. Susan Veldsman, the Director of the Scholarly Publication Program at ASAF. Susan's extensive career has seen her championing the cause of open science, beginning from her early days as an information librarian to her current role, where she drives the open science agenda at the Academy of Sciences of South Africa. Her leadership has significantly influenced the quality, visibility, and accessibility of Southern African journals. A warm welcome to the program, ladies.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Joy.
All right. So I'd like to start by inviting both of you to share a bit about your background and respective roles that have shaped this transformative journey. Ina, would you like to start?
Thanks so much, Joy, for this opportunity and for having me. I'm very excited to share my journey with you. I've always had a passion for self-learning and empowering others to acquire the necessary skills for their own journey. So I would investigate and explore and teach myself, and then I would pass on my skills to others. The adage or expression, if you're not willing to learn, no one can help you, resonates deeply with me, emphasizing the importance of personal initiative in learning. And I firmly believe that where there is a will, there is a way. And nothing in the world brings me more satisfaction than taking on new challenges and successfully accomplishing them. So I'm a very brave person, if I can put it like that. Perhaps this inclination stems from my upbringing in a household where my mother dedicated her entire life to teaching. Our exposure to books and libraries made an immense difference in shaping my perspectives, and my career is therefore really a dedication to my mom. With the advent of the internet, it felt as if I were destined for technology. I enjoy experimenting with new technological applications that support and advance science, scholarly publishing, and science engagement, integrating these IT tools into my work. In 21, I assumed the role of an information specialist at the University of Pretoria, where my responsibilities included implementing the institutional repository, developing the website, and implementing a federated search engine, and more. Previously, at Stellenbosch University in 2009, I was once again tasked with establishing the institutional repository, but this time also creating a hosting solution for scholarly journals published by the university, and my interest in publishing journals started there. Thereafter, in 2014, I became a part of the Academy of Science of South Africa, an experience that granted me the freedom to collaborate with various science and higher education institutions and stakeholders across. Conducting a landscape study of the African landscape in terms of open science was truly a highlight for me. This project spanned from 2016 until 2019.
Thank you, Ina. Susan?
Thank you very much, Joy. And once again, thank you for having us this afternoon. It's great to talk to you and to share with you our experiences and a very long career, I must add. I'm actually a trained librarian, and I started to work at the Department of Agriculture first, where I was part of a decentralized library in plant protection. But later on, I moved over to the higher education sector, where I worked for the Tshwane University of Technology, and then the now University of Johannesburg, where I ended up as deputy director of the library. But later on, my career sort of moved away and shifted from librarianship to join more and to be more focused on specialized science and technology issues, and specifically with a focus on science policies. So therefore, my interest in the work that I actually do now. I'm an old open access movement advocacist. I started in 2004 to advocate 2000 sorry 2004 to advocate for open access in South Africa, where I worked for IFIL, which I think the listeners might actually know, where I was a country coordinator, and that instilled in me sort of I almost want to say the love, but also reinforce the movement's power that it has to open up and to democratize knowledge as such, especially in terms of accessibility, etc. And that really set the scene for me for here in going forward, especially working with developing countries and realizing sort of the struggles that they have, not only to subscribe to databases, but to have access and to publish their own work in sort of commercialized databases, etc. But I think things changed quite tremendously for me in 2009 when I joined ASIF, where I'm now responsible for scholarly publishing in South Africa. I think what formed sort of my ideas and my career and sort of in the activities that we embark on is two very important consensus studies that were published by ASIF. And these consensus studies shaped scholarly publishing in South Africa. And as you might be aware, is that consensus studies or evidence-based studies, as academies of sciences call them, really informs policy and specifically the research output policy and science policies in South Africa. So that really set the scene for the next 14 years, starting in 2009 when I started with ASIF, which is a very interesting journey, and currently it's actually escalating just to bigger things, so to speak. So because of the work that ASIF does, we support, we initially started with open access and of course nowadays open science. I think in generally we're actually in a very good space in terms of open science, because I've become so frustrated over the years for open access per se not taking off really. Lots of decentralized projects, etc., but not being sort of put together or being gelled together under a policy. But I think we're now in a very good space, because in the first time, I think that open science policies worldwide is actually embedding themselves in a very strong value system of inclusivity, of accessibility, equitable and diversity, etc., on the one hand side, but then it also aims through open science is to address societal problems like poverty, climate change, etc. So I'm quite excited to be here and to be in this very particular space after so many years of frustration.
I can imagine. So now the next couple of questions are to you in regards to ASAP's contribution to policy. So the first one is, so ASAP is a key player in the scholarly communication landscape in South Africa and really the broader African region. Could you elaborate on its role in the development of the draft National Open Science Policy in South Africa? And how did the approach align with or differ with international practices? And what unique considerations were taken into account? Were there any specific provisions that ASAF championed for?
As I started to allude to previously, is that, you know, ASAF is in the business to advocate for open access, open science.
Right.
And I think at the time, which was about 4 years ago, we realized that open science is actually taking on far better traction than it did. And because under open science, there are many more issues being dealt with, meaning copyright or incentivization,
right,
or
right.
ICTs or connectivity. And we realized that we could take on a much broader role. And at the time, we collaborated with UNESCO. We received some funding. We set up a workshop. And then we collaborated with Professor Cameron Nayland from the Curtin University in Australia, who is also leading the open science movement in Australia, with doing a lot of research and portals and dashboards
right.
to indicate the adoption of open science, open access worldwide,
right.
and advocating for standards to be followed so that we can actually track on the adoption of open access as such. That particular workshop we had in collaboration with UNESCO and the Curtin University really created a platform for debate and for further discussion within South Africa. It was soon actually spun out then to the DSI, the Department of Science and Innovation, where they then took lead through their very large collaborative efforts with the European Union. And they have a facility which they call the EU DSI Debate Facility.
Right.
So many workshops after that follow, writers were appointed to assist, is to actually come up then with the first open science policy framework, which was established for South Africa.
So, you know,
where is this policy at the moment? So
yes.
There's a little bit of frustration, I actually think, in the research community
okay.
in South Africa. Just perhaps from a very personal opinion, I think that this framework might need a little bit of more work to actually
right.
translate into some outcomes for policy, you know, more towards an open science policy, because my personal feeling is it's kind of a framework, very extensive documentation referring to all the aspects that one can include under open science as
right.
such. You asked me, do we align? Yes, definitely, we
Good.
Align.
Good.
We do not function in isolation. I think that will be shooting yourself in the foot.
Yes.
We have many good examples internationally, referring to UNESCO's 10 recommendations,
right.
even the ISC in terms of the scholarly publishing, the future world of scholarly publishing. I
right.
think these are very valuable principles that set the scene.
Mm.
And after all, we all function in this global network.
Mm.
But it's not only globally that we have to align with. We have to think about our continent, Africa.
Mm.
There are some policy documents already in existence, the Africa We Want of 2063.
Yes.
And also through the African Union, you know, there's already a lot of policy documents being established. And I think
right.
it's very important to seek that alignment and to function within that alignment. It doesn't help to be sort of the outcast or the different
no.
one. I think it really advances then the question and the cause that we want to create with the open science policies as such. So I think that's very important that we realize that we work in a much broader network and policy framework.
Okay.
But yes,
so,
each country, mm-hmm. yes, sorry, Joy?
No, I was saying, just finish.
Uh-huh. I'm just sort of want to touch upon about each country, you know, whether they will have their specific considerations. I think so, yes. You know, I think that our copyright and intellectual property rights laws are very different from those
That's
in
true.
Africa and those internationally, you know, so we'll have to fall into that remit as well. And if we just think about the evaluation of researchers or the rating of researchers in South Africa, which is squarely in the mandate of the NRF, the National Research Foundation, and how we have to adjust that system to fall into the broader open science evaluation and incentivization models. So yes, definitely, each country will have its own you know, little things that they have to
right.
consider setting up an open science policy.
Okay. So you've partly answered the following question, the next question, but if there's anything missing, you can contribute to it. And that is, how has the scientific community responded to the policy? And have there been any indicators suggesting positive development or a cultural shift towards the democratization of scientific knowledge in the broader context of the continent, in this case, Africa? How do you see the draft national open science policy influencing other countries' initiatives and policies regarding open science and open access?
I would certainly say positively. It has influenced.
Right.
It has certainly created awareness.
That's true. That's true. Yes.
You know, definitely all the other countries are looking at open science policies. What should it entail? What are the things to be considered?
Yes.
And the things to be changed? I think generally speaking, the movement towards open science policy is very slow. And I think
yes.
therefore the African Open Science Project is very important to create
right.
further awareness. In the work that we did with AOSP, you know, we did see there are many
right.
decentralized projects already on the continent. So it's
mm-hmm.
not as if Africa is not aware or and that it's actually dormant in terms of open science activities. That it's definitely there and there are definitely efforts. But now to pull it together under
yes.
the open science policy, I think that is the challenge. If
yeah.
you think how stakeholders and government bodies and legislation that you have to pull together under this policy,
really?
It is a massive work. You know, it will need some time to
oh,
actually
yes.
establish. I do just want to send out a warning, you know, in terms of Africa's efforts to open science policies, we must not conflate open science with open access. And that's
that
just
is true.
My only concern, and we must understand that open science is a far broader
yes.
and far wider concept than just
open
open
access.
access. Yes.
Okay, and I think the reason for that, why there's still that slight confusion, is because the whole conversation began with open access. So there's a lot of push to open access. And then now getting to open science, it's now relearning what this concept is, which also includes open access. So, but also with the slow adoption, the way you mentioned it, I was just thinking through as you're answering your question, and I feel it's also the political dynamics of the continent. Some countries are quick to adopt, some are slow. And, you know, for some, SD&I and higher education is not as a priority level, like defense or or general politics. So it tends to hit a back burner, but still the slow adoption of it, what I tend to feel is not intentional. This is my observation. It's not intentional. It's just the political dynamics that you'd find in any government. Because anyway, in any case, promoting policy in any government, you have to go through the bureaucracy of that said government. And some are faster, some are big, some are even surprising. But what I'm also seeing is that even with the the Open Science Dialogues TCC Africa is hosting, we're in a situation where governments are reaching out to us to host these dialogues. This wasn't the case, you know, in most of most policies, you know, you have to pitch to present to the government the importance of this. But thanks to this uniform conversation on open science, now governments are seeing the importance of it. It's just that we have to deal with the internal political dynamics, which might sometimes drag the process in terms of adoption. But the good thing is that the awareness is increasing. Now, Ina, given your active involvement in the pilot study and landscape findings of the African Open Science Platform, what observations can you share regarding the current capacity for open science across the continent? Has it evolved since the pilot study? And are there any insights you have gained on AOSP's impact since its establishment?
When we concluded the study in 2019, it became clear that there was a lack of infrastructure on the continent, insufficient policies governing science and the sharing of scientific data, a shortage of capacity building opportunities across sciences, and no incentives for scientists to share their data and a more in an open and transparent manner. The responsibility of the landscape study was not solely to collect information for a better understanding of open science and open data activities on the continent. Its purpose was also to raise awareness of open science and emphasize the importance of required policies, infrastructure, capacity building initiatives, and the necessity for scientists to be supported through incentives or acknowledgement. Initiatives such as the H3A BioNet and the Square Kilometer Array, however, demonstrated great success and was used as an example of what is possible. COVID-19, however, halted the establishment of an actual platform in 2020. Nevertheless, I'm delighted to report that the project is making progress under the leadership of the National Research Foundation with Dr. Tsiama Motsegwa as the director. There was a call for science granting councils across the continent to get involved and for countries to contribute funding, because after all, it's something for the whole continent, not only for South Africa. It is increasingly becoming a requirement from funders that data should be shared and made openly accessible, such as the Wellcome Trust, IDRC, and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And it's encouraging to see open science conversations happening more frequently among scientists. In my view, grassroots initiatives began to evolve as an outcome of the landscape study. Recently, I read about the Regional Universities Forum for Capacity Building in Agriculture, or RUF Forum, and the West and Central African Research and Education Network, or WACRIN, signing a memorandum of understanding to enhance scientific and scholarly communication in Africa, thereby making science and data sets more open through a data repository. These might seem like small victories, but they are incredibly significant. This is what can be anticipated going forward, with national policies expected to emerge similar to the South African policy currently before Parliament.
Okay, thank you so much, Ina. And then I have another question for you. In addition to your position at ASAF, you also serve as the DOAJ ambassador for Southern Africa. What has been the contribution of DOAJ in promoting open access infrastructure in Southern Africa? And what specific initiatives or projects exemplify this contribution? Are there collaborative synergies between DOAJ and AOSP to further the cause of open science in the region?
Mentioning DOAJ, it's a special year for DOAJ since this year it celebrated its 20th anniversary. So the DOAJ has played a significant role in promoting open access infrastructure in all countries, but also in Southern Africa. DOAJ is globally recognized and a community-created online directory that indexes and provides access to high-quality, open-access, peer-reviewed journals. Its contributions in South Africa primarily revolve around fostering open-access publishing and supporting initiatives that enhance access to scholarly information in the region. DOAJ has been instrumental in improving the visibility and discoverability of scholarly journals from Southern Africa by including reputable journals from the region in its directory. By doing so, DOAJ facilitates broader access to research outputs and promotes the visibility of Southern African scholarship on a global scale. So therefore, specific initiatives and projects that exemplify DOAJ's contribution in South Africa include, first of all, the inclusion of Southern African journals. DOAJ actively encourages and evaluates applications from journals in Southern Africa to be indexed in this directory. This inclusion ensures that quality research from the region gains greater visibility, attracting more readers and increasing the impact of scholarly work. And secondly, in terms of capacity building and training, DOAJ has been involved in capacity building efforts, providing guidance and training to journal editors, publishers, and institutions in Southern Africa. These efforts aim to improve the quality of open access publishing practices and enhance compliance with international publishing standards. Regarding collaborative synergies between DOAJ and the African Open Science Platform, both entities share a common goal of promoting open science in Africa, albeit with different focuses. While DOAJ primarily concentrates on open access publishing, AOSP aims for broader engagement in open science practices across various disciplines and research activities. Collaborations between DOAJ and AOSP could potentially strengthen the cause of open science in Southern Africa. Such collaborations might involve joint initiatives to promote open access and open science. Both DOAJ and AOSP could work together to raise awareness about the benefits of open access and open science practices through workshops, webinars, and collaborative advocacy efforts in the region, and in the second instance, support capacity development. Collaborative efforts could be directed towards supporting capacity building activities aimed at enhancing open access publishing standards and broader open science practices among researchers, institutions, and publishers in Southern Africa. While specific collaborative projects between DOAJ and AOSP might not have been extensively documented or publicly highlighted, the potential for synergistic efforts between these organizations remains significant in advancing the cause of open science and open access infrastructure in the region. Collaboration could bring about mutual benefits by leveraging their respective expertise and networks to further support the development and promotion of open access publishing and open science practices in Southern Africa.
Okay, so now the next question is for you, Susan. You've been in the forefront of the scholarly publishing program at ASAF. From your perspective, how do global initiatives like DOAJ shape the landscape of open access in the global South? And what lessons can be drawn for South and Africa?
I think it is extremely important is that we sort of participate in these global initiatives. I think Ina started to actually allude to those. And so have I in my previous answers. And that is to say that, you know, we function in a very particular open science ecosystem. And I think it's very important to be a team player and also to play an active role in this ecosystem. It really makes it so much easier for countries. If we look at the DOAJ, it really sets the standards, it indicates what are the best practices, and it aligns us
right
with international best practices. And I think that is extremely important. Also for our authors who would like to be, and our editors to be role players in an international system of things. And I think just by participating in these initiatives, we become very important role players in that regard. So that's extremely important. I also just would like to highlight one very particular concern that we have in Africa, and I think that is very important where we start tapping into especially the practices in Europe, and that is the sharing of data.
Right.
Especially where personal information of participants are involved. And I think that's our biggest challenge actually in Africa, is when we share data, is that this data is being taken out of our continent and then it gets embedded into other research in abroad, outside of our continent. So ASIF has been playing a really leading role in setting up a code of conduct, which then researchers will have to follow if they start sharing data, especially where personal information is involved, is that is under certain conditions and circumstances, and there's a framework in which it can be shared. And I think therefore it's very important is that we seek, especially the European Union GDPR certification, to ensure that we also can be global players in the sharing of data, especially those associated with personal information. So again, it is important to look towards or outside the borders of South Africa, also to align and to ensure our authors, our editors, the research in South Africa, that we are following international standards and that we are a very important team player. And you know, also because Africa research is very tainted and is sort of viewed with a lot of apprehension from other countries beyond our continent.
Yeah.
We know the whole North debate and North-South debate, and that authors of the Southern Hemisphere, they struggle and battle to publish their results in Northern journals, etc. We know that huge problem that does exist. So it's very important that we actually strengthen our local journals and our local research practices and to follow standards, so that we can ensure the world that we can be trusted, that we follow trusted standards and best practices, and we play fair. And also then to combat, of course, predatory and unethical publishing practices. So it is important that we fall into the broader remit of international organizations and what they stand for and the work that they do.
So Ina, how do you see the impact of the journal master list created by the South African Department of Higher Education and Training, well known as DHET, on mitigating predatory journals, not only in South Africa, but also in other African countries? Have there been observable changes in the quality and credibility of scholarly journals in the region?
So the Department of Higher Education and Training, or DHET, doesn't maintain a comprehensive master list per se. According to the DHET Research Outputs Policy, seven indexes are accredited by the DHET. These include the Clarivate Analytics Web of Science, Scopus, the Norwegian List Level 2 Journals, the Sihalo List, the IBSS List, the DIAJ List, and a DHET List containing South African journal titles. Whenever an author publishes in a journal listed within any of these indexes, it generates income for the higher education institution with which the author is affiliated. All journal titles featured in these lists have undergone rigorous quality assessment processes to ensure exclusion of predatory journals, although occasional oversights might occur. Nonetheless, these guidelines provide authors with a reliable reference for trusted journals. Consequently, observable improvements have been noted in the quality and credibility of scholarly journals within our region. We also welcome publications and articles from authors across the continent. Despite these advancements, there remains a continuing need for capacity building. Currently, we are actively engaged in a series of workshops focused on implementing criteria for potential inclusion in the DOAJ. This initiative is a collaborative effort with Research for Life, and it targets scholarly journals from Tanzania, Ghana, and Bhutan.
So as we wind up, I'd like to hear your views on this last question. So from your vantage point, what are the key lessons What key lessons have you learned from your collective experience in open access, and particularly now open science? And what do you envision as the future of open science in Africa? Ina, would you like to begin, please?
First of all, I think AI is on the increase, artificial intelligence. And for Africa to be represented on AI tools such as ChatGPT, we need to have data out there. If ChatGPT returns with a response and it's not inclusive of Africa and South Africa and it's US-centric or Eurocentric, it means it could not find sufficient data from Africa. From its data, its searches. But to realize the full potential of open data and open science in Africa, it's essential to address challenges such as infrastructure limitations, data quality assurance, ensuring ethical considerations, promoting data literacy, and establishing supportive policy that encourage data sharing and collaboration among researchers and institutions. Collaboration among governments, research institutions, NGOs, and the private sector is crucial in harnessing the benefits of open data and science for the advancement of African countries. There's lots of opportunities for innovation through AI utilizing data from Africa.
What additional comments do you have?
I think there's more and more an uptake for open science. And an awareness of the need for open data and data to be made openly accessible. And that data must be managed in a responsible way. It should be quality data and it should be well documented. And we all have a responsibility to make sure our data is managed in a responsible way for AI innovations to come from that data. And that's my main takeaway point. I think that's what we're all working towards too.
That's true.
In terms of DOAJ, whatever we do and whatever we put out there online, in the end, AI will harvest from there.
Okay, thank you. And Susan, as we wind up?
I think what for me stands out is sort of this vehicle called Open Science, and it allows us to question and in some instances actually boycott some of the systems. So it does bring about an opportunity to change a lot of things, especially in the research system, being how we publish, how we should share data, how should we evaluate our researchers to sort of not look at very traditional ways of journal impact factor, H indexes, etc. That we should question that, and then if we question them, what should we put in their place? And then how do we recognize when authors and researchers actually participate in this, let's call it, new system? And what are those incentivization systems? And that makes me quite excited, is that there's a complete renewal of the system as such, and we have an opportunity here, and we must really work hard with that. But it also emphasizes the role of research in solving today's problems. I don't think ever before have there so many emphasis been put on to what is it that we need to resolve. And then, of course, the role of researchers in decision making and policy making, that whole advisory role that they should play. And then, of course, to be advisory is then the necessity of evidence to eradicate sort of the world's problems. And Ina has also stolen one of my my points, and that is certainly artificial intelligence and ethics, because now it opens up a complete different can of worms, and
that's
we start engaging with the issue of trust and trusted science
and research integrity.
And research integrity, it sort of emphasizes again the very important role that we have to play right there. So thank you again once again for the opportunity.
Thank you, ladies. This has been very enlightening. You're doing such amazing work. You've influenced policy not only at a national level, but also at a continental level with the work you're doing. It is really appreciated. Thank you so much for joining us at Mazungumzo.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of Mazungumzo Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on all our channels for more updates and for candid stories by researchers, policymakers, higher education leaders, and innovators on their journeys. See you in our next episode.